You are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indy Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL Coco, 99.9 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Coco, Florida. We are on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and we're heard on the World Wide Web everywhere. Yeah.
We are on 1510 WWBC is where all of our shows, you can hit the listen live button from any device that you have, whether it be a phone or an iPad or whatever it is, and you'll be able to hear us live. Or if you'd like to download the shows, you can hit that on demand button. Just pick any Monday, because the Mondays are all we've been here for 13 years. Every Monday at 1 o'clock, you can go on that particular on demand and be able to download all of the shows. But I do have one little announcement to make, Zita. I think this is probably a good time to do that. One of our great guests that we've had on the show before is Be Unique. They are a magazine. They read, watch, and listen. They have a blog as well. They are having a MetaFest October 8th from 10 to 5, and that's going to be at Merritt Island. It's free admission and parking. They're going to bring together vendors and providers for the public who will spend the day having fun and shopping. Will they explore enlightenment, alternative healthcare, art, and opportunities? It's going to be interactive, inspirational, and fun presentations, and they're going to be surrounded by vendors who can answer questions and provide services right there on the spot. So they are still looking for vendors, so if you decide that you want to be a vendor at this event, again, it's October 8th, contact Mary at beunique.org, and that's beunique.org.
And do you have her phone number?
I do not.
It's 321-417-4309. And one of the great things about the Merritt Square Mall is one of our sponsors, Cloud9 Sleep Shop and Mattress and Furniture, is in the Merritt Square Mall as well. And I think at this MetaFest, they're planning to have yoga, and they're going to have expert presentations about health and well-being and all kind of fun stuff, Miss Ellen. And they're giving away gift baskets, door prizes, 50-50, drummers, dancers, tai chi. Yeah. Sounds like a fun day.
It sounds like a really fun day. And that's from 10 to 5, once again, on October 8th, which is this week coming up.
Right. And so, you know, our show, for those listeners who are just tuning in, we are heard right here in Brevard County, Florida, on our stations, on our radio stations, and we're heard all over the world as well. And we sit here on Mondays, Ellen, myself, Ali, Samantha, and we talk about issues that are affecting people right here in Brevard County, Florida, and we talk about issues that are going on around the world, whether it's healthcare, whether it's education, whether it's things to do with our infrastructure, environment, voting, most important, register to vote, have a plan to vote. And we also speak with people who have a story to tell. And, you know, I always find the best guests for our show. So our second segment, we have Kimberly Musselman, who is running for county court judge right here in Brevard County, Florida. She'll say a quick hello to our listeners. And before we go to our first segment.
Hello.
She sounds like Betty Davis. Hello. And our first segment, you know me, Ellen, I'm always on social media, and I find these really interesting people that have a story to tell. And we all know that life is about relationships. The relationships you have with your siblings, with your family, your coworkers, your friends. What would life be without people in our life? And I found this lovely lady, Cynthia Mifsud. I did say the wrong thing this morning. And she's been fighting for her mother, Betty Hayes. And I want our listeners to know that I really felt as though there's so many Cynthia Mifsuds around all over the world that are fighting for the elderly. Because we all know there's exploitation going on with the elderly because they're lonely or because they don't have someone in their life to look after them or whatever. And Cynthia is her daughter.
Yeah.
And so Cynthia's on the phone. And we're going to welcome her to our show and let her speak with us about her mom and her story and her journey to get her mother back. So, Cynthia, welcome to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Hi, thank you.
So, I'm sorry, your name, you know, I don't know why I keep thinking your name is Milford and everything else, but it's not. It's Mifsud. How do you pronounce it?
It's Mifsud.
Like
it's like it's spelled. It's
yeah, like the grass, Mifsud.
Yeah.
Good.
Yes.
So, on May 1st, 2021, your mom, Betty Hayes, was abducted from your home by your niece, which... Wow, that's quite a story there. So tell our listeners and Viewpoint with Sita and Friends a little bit about that day and what happened.
Well, now I kind of call it unlawfully taken because people, when you think of kidnapping or abducted, you know, they think of children and stuff. But she was unlawfully taken because I had durable power of attorney for my mother. She had been living in my home for over 2 years. Both my parents were living with me until my father passed away in September of 2019. But my mother was still living with me in May of 21. And my father's sister was really ill in Alabama. So I wanted to go down and see her for what I knew would be the last time. So I flew down to see her. And while I was gone, my sister-in-law, Holly, was taking care of my mother. And then my husband, Pat, was there at night. Well, on this particular day, my nephew, who was my niece's brother, asked if he could take my mom to a birthday party for his little daughter who was turning 3. And I originally said no because I was having issues with them anyway, with the way they were acting and just everything they were doing. Every time my mom would get on the phone with them, it was always, oh, we've been banned. We can't come see you, which was completely untrue because they were coming to my house when they wanted to see her and they had a key. So they weren't banned. But I was afraid because I was out of town. But I still felt bad saying no because it was her 3rd birthday. So I said, okay, you know, you can take her. So I had Holly set it up to meet him, to let him take my mom. And she did. And then when it was time for my mom to come back that night, my niece, who's his sister, brought my mom back. And my mom came in, and my sister-in-law was attending her, giving her pills and everything. And while she's doing this, my niece is going around my mom's little apartment, which is in my home. It was like a mother-in-law suite. We call it the grandpad, but that's what it really is, a mother-in-law suite.
Sounds like she was pretty comfortable in your home.
Oh, absolutely. It was like her own home. It was custom built for her. She had a walk-in bathtub that we had taken from her home and brought to my home because when we were planning on moving them in, you know, we talked to her about it and she said, can I bring my bathtub? And I said, you know, I'll talk to my husband and see if we can make that happen. And he said, yeah, we can do it. So we made it happen. She had her walk-in bathtub. She had like a kitchenette where she could still cook and they had their bedroom. They had like a little sitting area. They had a deck that went off the back living room area that overlooked the pond, our pond and our swimming pool. You know, so it was a beautiful setting. They had privacy. It was really, really nice for the two of them. But so on this particular day, my niece comes in, brings my mom in, and starts going around the little apartment, opening doors and closing doors and cupboards and all this stuff. And my sister-in-law is like, what is she doing? And then when she's done, her husband's in there with her also. And my sister-in-law had just had surgery and was in a neck brace. So my sister-in-law is like looking at her like, what is she doing? Well, while she wasn't looking, her husband grabbed my mom's dog and took him out to her car. And then my niece tells my sister-in-law she's taking my mom. And she goes, you can't take her. And she goes, well, she wants to spend the night for the weekend. And she goes, no, you can't take her. You have to ask Cindy. Cindy has, you know, durable power of attorney. No, I'll call her on the way. And she just has my mom get up. And my mom doesn't know. She can't hear well. And it's her granddaughter. So she's not going to think there's anything, you know, untoward happening. She just doesn't understand. So she goes with her. My sister-in-law can't do anything to stop her. She's in a neck brace. So she's panicking, freaking out, and she calls me, and I'm down in Alabama, and I can't get the call because I'm in a dead zone, basically, for my particular phone carrier. And my brother, who is her husband, Randy, he was with me because we both went down there together, you know, to say basically our goodbyes to our aunt. And so she finally gets a hold of another family member who calls to the house on a landline to tell us that, you know, they're trying to get a hold of us. And I speak to my sister-in-law, who's like hysterical crying. And I'm like, what's wrong? What's wrong? Calm down, calm down. And I'm thinking my mom fell, something, you know, happened. And she's like, you know, Rachel took grandma. She took, you know, mom. She took mom. And I'm just like, what? I mean, I was just totally like, you're kidding me, you know? And
it sounds like maybe Rachel was planning this all along.
Oh, absolutely. We all believe that now. She waited for her opportunity to do it. She knew I was out of town, and that's what she did.
But do you think she feels like maybe something was going on at your home with your mom that she was planning to come to get her?
Yeah, what was Rachel's motivation?
Yeah.
Well, so in 2017, when my father started showing signs of dementia it started getting really bad, you could tell that the things he was saying and doing were just, it was starting to get unsafe. We were starting to really like, oh no, what are we going to do? And we had to up our game, and we had to start bringing caregivers to their house. We had to come over everything. I was going over there at least once or twice a day to make sure they had their pills and make sure that, you know, everything was good. And we had caregivers there during the day. And at that point, she had said she would take them to her house, which was 3 hours from us, and she would charge $3,000 per person to live with her, and she would take care of them. And we were like, no, you're not doing that. I don't want my mom 3 hours away from me. She's my mom. I was the caregiver. I was the one going over there all the time.
Are you also the eldest child in the family?
No, I'm the youngest.
Oh, okay.
So
you were pretty close to them.
Brother, I was extremely close to them. They vacationed with me in Hawaii four times. They went on all kinds of vacations with me. I took them down to Alabama to see his family. I organized family reunions for everybody. And we were extremely close. My dad was at my house all the time. My mom, we were very close to my three kids.
Yeah.
And it was just
and you know, the thing is, I am a long-term care nurse, and I've been one for almost 33 years of my life. And so I see a lot of families that are having difficulty with end-of-life issues and with relationships with their siblings when it comes to caring for a parent. But usually when one of the siblings go ahead and make all the arrangements to have their home converted into an apartment and all that, people really are grateful that someone is doing it, because that's a big load, you know, and people always say, well, you know what, she's in good hands, she's being well taken care of. And the other siblings, they help, they assist in other ways. They assist with transportation to and from the doctors, they assist with meals, but they don't actually take the person out. So
problem was they weren't assisting. My sister, we had a pandemic going on, and I was all alone trying to handle everything. I have a son who has a traumatic brain injury. He has what's called an AVM in his brain. I don't know if you're familiar with that or not, but it causes strokes and brain bleeds, and you can die from it. And it's very rare. It's a tangle of blood vessels that involve veins and arteries. And it's like an aneurysm where it just bursts. But it's less common than an aneurysm. And it's very dangerous. And my son's was so deep that it was inoperable. So he had radiation on it in 2018. Well, the side effects of the radiation started in 2019, like a year later. He started getting brain swelling, and I don't even know if it was a year later.
So you had a lot going on in the
exactly.
house in addition to caring
exactly.
for your mom. So
exactly.
So bring us up to speed. So bring us up to speed, because you know the segment goes by so quick. So I saw that your son had written something. I saw it on your blog about your mom. He had written the story about how she was taken from the home and all that. So the family is pretty supportive of what you're doing and fighting in the court system to try to get your mom back. But I don't understand how the bank was able to use fraudulent documents to take to. They did.
No, they did not.
Okay.
They knew they were fraudulent. right away when they saw it, that he had seen this exploitation of the elderly before, the bank manager, because I was in his office when my niece showed up in the drive-thru and handed him this revocation of my power of attorney with the bank. And so he flagged the whole account and said that, you know, he guaranteed me she wouldn't be able to touch it. And then I think it was like 2 weeks later, I received a check for the trust at my home. They had closed my mom's account. But what they should have done is it should have been reported to the police. It should have been reported to the, is it the FDIC, you know, that controls that sort of thing?
Well, you know, the banks, most of the banks, they're aware of the scams
exactly.
that are going on with the elderly population. And they are trained, actually, to look out for stuff like that and call law enforcement. So I'm not sure, you know, how that bank... But, you know...
Well, they didn't, but they closed the account. So I think they wanted to be off the hook. So they knew that it was a criminal thing going on. They knew my mom had been taken unlawfully. And instead of them calling the police and doing what they should have done or reporting it to the FDIC, they went ahead and just closed the account so then it's out of their hands. They knew the money was safe, that I had the trust check, and... They wanted to walk away because obviously litigation and stuff would be expensive for them to have to go to court and stuff to say, you know, what happened and all that. So they backed out of all of it by just giving the money, you know, back and closing the account.
So are you able to see your mom now? I know you went a couple of times and then a couple of times the visitation was canceled. How does she react when you... bring her to your home? Does she know her familiar surroundings and her little apartment and stuff?
Yes. So as soon as I took her into her apartment, and it, by the way, she was isolated for 14 months, and that was so they could manipulate and control her. Now, I have four siblings, and all three, me and my two brothers, are all on the same page. We've all been supported, and my sister was agreeing with us this whole time, too, until her daughter took my mother. And her daughter and her have always had an awful relationship, and she was always desperate to have a relationship with her, and I think that's why she's siding with her and supporting her in what she's done. But so when she came in and she went into her apartment, she's looked and she said, "I remember this place." And then she's, you know, you can see that she's remembering my dad and her there. And
yeah, well, those,
you know,
are precious memories,
it.
You know. So,
oh, yeah. She misses it. She went in the bedroom. You know, she sees her bathtub in there, and she wants to be there. She wants to stay, and I can't let her stay because the courts are involved, and the whole probate court system, they don't follow any laws. They just go ahead and they do whatever they want. The guardian ad litem assigned to my mom's case never did an investigation. She never came to my home to see where my mom lived. And she never would speak to any of my brothers. So
and
clearly,
so, and,
she had
and
her
you,
own agenda.
And from what I read about the case, you guys, what, you've spent over $100,000 already in litigation fees?
I have over $120,000 in litigation fees. I have probably paid around 70, and I still owe some. I mean, it's just absolutely.
Well, you know what that tells
me?
That tells me that you truly love your mom. I mean, that is amazing. And so tomorrow, you have court tomorrow, and you're asking your friends on your blog to be a court watcher, to kind of cheer you guys on, to talk to us a little bit about that and how someone can get involved. I really feel for your family. I will say a prayer for healing, because it's so sad. You know, we're all supposed to find our purpose on earth, you know, on this earthly journey called life. And it's not just you, but so many families are broken up today, whether it's politics or whether it's relationships or whether it's money, whether it's what's going on in your family with the elderly. And I will say a prayer, because it sounds like you and your siblings were pretty close before all of this. So tell us about the watching tomorrow. Tomorrow's the 4th. It's a big day for you. What is it, 10 o'clock tomorrow?
It's 10 o'clock tomorrow. And if they go on to our blog, Justice for Betty Hayes, I have the information to, you know, to court watch for it. But I also wanted to speak on the fact that I believe the reason why I have visitation now is because I've been so vocal about everything. I flew to New York, and I was part of Carolyn's Law with Christine Montanti. and Senator Palumbo. And I also did a roundtable hearing with Senator Palumbo and Senator Barillo about elder abuse and guardianships and all that. I did it in May of 2022, and then I just went again in July, I believe.
Well, that's, you know, what you're doing is you're taking your issue that you're having with the family, you're turning it into activism, which I absolutely love because, you know, there are so many people right now in the United States that they're older and their loved ones do not keep in touch with them. And a lot of them are exploited. Sometimes they're exploited by their trusted attorneys. I just read on your blog where an attorney had scammed a millionaire out of all so much money. You are posting some really cool articles too about elder abuse and loneliness and depression and things like that. So it's good to see that you are turning what's happening to you into activism, in that you're helping other people. And politically, that's how we make a change with stuff like this.
Right, exactly. And what's really a coincidence, I don't know, or fate, Carolyn's Law is written about Carolyn Moncanti, who is in Broward County. And her daughter is the one that I am with the legislators in New York changing the bill and writing bills for Carolyn's Law specifically about Carolyn Moncanti, who is in Broward County, Florida.
Yeah. Did you try, Cynthia Mifsud? I got it. On your blog, I didn't see. Did you try to contact your niece, Rachel, and say, look, let's just have a family dinner and let's talk about this without the attorneys, without any professionals. Let's find out what's happening. Why is it you feel mom is better off with you?
Well, there was no opportunity for that. So she took her on the 1st of May, and I believe it was the 3rd of May while I was still, like, you know, spinning around trying to figure out what on earth is happening. I had to fly home and all this, you know, emergency stuff about my mother. She went and got personal protection orders against us in her county, where they automatically issue them and then you fight them. So I had personal protection order against me, my husband, my brother. She tried to get one against my sister-in-law, and literally it said I made her sad. She got a personal protection order for making her sad.
Well, you know, caregivers also need to take care of themselves. Are you in any therapy for yourself and your loved ones in your home? Because mentally, physically, emotionally, and even financially, this is exhausting.
It is. It is absolutely exhausting. And I think I feel like I have PTSD at this point, but I just keep pushing forward and helping. I think my therapy is helping everybody. I have people from all around the whole country. I have people in Canada, Australia, almost every single state in the United States who are contacting me, asking me to help them. And I just see this as such a huge problem in America, and it's in so many other countries. It's just unreal.
It's cultural too. You know, it's also cultural, because a lot of cultures, the elderly lives with people at home. But in other cultures, they have the independence, right? And so here now is a good time for us to tell our listening audience on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends that we're chatting with Cynthia Mifsud, and she has a blog where she is fighting for her mom, Betty Hayes. At first it was abduction, but now you're saying she was taken. So, and some of the key factors that increase the risk of exploitation are things like loneliness. Lonely adults more likely and more receptive to financial predators. Isolation, when they're isolated, there may be fewer family members. Very important, poor health, which is like impairment of vision and hearing. Poor physical health and age-related brain injuries, as well as cognitive impairment. So when people contact you, what are some of the things they're telling you that they're seeing in their own family lives and in their communities?
Well, the first thing that the predator does is isolate them. They isolate them, and then they'll use, like, we call it chemical restraints, which is over-medicating them so that they appear to have dementia. My mother actually has dementia, but the other people that are telling me that their mother didn't have dementia or their father didn't have dementia, and now they chemically restrain them so that they can't speak out about what's happening to them. They isolate them from their families, and they also defame the families, just like I've been defamed. They right away, the table is turned, and it's like, oh, well, we're going to say, you know, you did malfeasance. So I spent the whole last year going over my mom's accounting. I had to pay professionals to do my accounting for me because every time it's handed in, they want it done differently. They want it on a spreadsheet. Then they want it on a spreadsheet with receipts. Then they want it on court forms. I mean, it's just back and forth every time. They'll never...
They're making it very difficult for you. So I see we have 2 minutes left, and I see my friend Allie Tambor is our resident guest here on our show. She's shaking her head, and she's got some experience. She wants to share something really quick.
Yeah, the one thing that I have learned over the years of coming in contact with Misfits going through is that it's ensuring that all the family way ahead of time knows what's going on, and that there are attorneys involved way before you think, it's not time for that. And it's the things like living wills and powers of attorney and setting up trust accounts. And it's a lot of effort, but then it becomes a really good fence to stop things from going awry later.
But she was the trusted contact.
It's actually useless because a judge can set aside a durable power of attorney in seconds. Mine was set aside, and my mother was given to a private for-profit guardian. So none of that matters. It doesn't do any good. My mom had a trust. The judge made me give the trust to this private for-profit guardian.
So how can we help you? Your mom is 88 years old, right? Betty Hayes is 88 years old.
Yes.
What else can we do besides tune in tomorrow to the hearing? I see you sent all the information on your blog. And, you know, thank you so much for keeping up with the blog, too, because people feel like they know you, and we feel like we know your mom as well, and we feel like we're fighting right along with you. What else can we do besides pray?
I think everyone needs to contact their legislators, contact the representatives in their own states, their own communities, and we need to get laws on the books that will protect the elderly and disabled. The law in New York, and she's bringing it to Florida for her mom who's in Broward County, is Carolyn's Law, and that law will make isolation a thing of the past. You cannot isolate the elderly and disabled, which is how they're able to get away with this.
Yes.
And another part of it is that there's going to be a cap on fees. That's another part of her law. A cap on attorney fees, no isolation, and an evidentiary hearing within 10 days.
Hey, it sounds like you should be running for office yourself. I swear, I've learned along the way that sometimes, you know, you take what you've been dealt with, and you can take a negative and make it a positive. If you have, like my Jewish friend, you say you have to have the chutzpah to do it. And it sounds like you can do that because you are educating me on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends and all our listeners about exploitation of the elderly, which we're so concerned about children when we hear the word kidnapping or abduction. But it happens to people who are disabled and old as well.
The most vulnerable, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and that's what we're here on the planet Earth, right, to protect the most vulnerable amongst us, and the elderly is near and dear to my heart. That's why I've worked in nursing homes all my life, and I see it all the time. So I really applaud you, Cynthia, for what you're doing, and I hope you and your family can get back to together at some point. But also, I'd like to see you take your activism and run for office, girl. We need people with passion for the elderly.
Thank you.
So give us your contact information. We have 30 seconds left. If somebody wanted to go on the blog, give us the information how to read about what you're doing or contact you or keep Betty and you in our prayers.
Justice for Betty Hayes is the name of the blog. And, you know, you can send a message or a comment, whatever you want. And I get back to everybody, you know, as soon as possible if they are, you know, being affected by something like this. I try to contact someone in that area that can help them. It's a huge problem, and we all need to come together to stop it, because one day it could be us, you know.
That's right. And that would be your slogan when you run for office. So we're sending you a group hug from all four of us.
Thank you. All five of us, actually.
Good luck tomorrow. And whatever the outcome, your mother is very fortunate to be loved.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Cynthia, for calling in here on Viewpoint and See That. And friends, we're going to take a quick break and listen to our sponsors. And we'll be right back after the break with Kimberly Musselman, ready for judgeship in Brevard.
Hey, Cynthia, thank you so much.
Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency room. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 13 locations, including one in Volusia County. With so many MedFast Urgent Care centers, there is a MedFast near you. MedFast offers top quality care that is close by, and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. Just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MEDFAST, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MEDFAST. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and friends. Boy, I feel like I'm fighting for Betty Hayes right now. And we're heard on AM 1510, WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and on the World Wide Web, at WWBC.com, and you just hit Listen Live. And Ellen's got another announcement to make for Friends Be Unique magazines.
I do. This coming Saturday, come to Merritt Island Square Mall. There is a MetaFest. It's free from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. You can win prizes, win 50-50. They have live performances. They have everything from artists to yoga, including billy dancers, drummers, and free Tai Chi. You can shop for the holidays from locals and save money by winning. And they have gift baskets for more than $100. So you can call 321-417-4309. It is put on by our great friends at Be Unique, which is B-U-N-E-K-E. They have a blog. They also have a magazine as well. You can get in touch with anyone to be a vendor by contacting Mary at beunique.org. Once again, that website is B-U-N-E-K-E.org. So, Sita, we are excited to have not just this fantastic event coming up this Saturday, but we also have with us in studio Miss Kimberly Musselman.
Yeah, and her name is easy. Kimberly Musselman for Circuit Court Judge Group 4.
Right, no guessing.
Right, it's here in Rivers County, Florida.
For Sita.
Yes. So, and Kimberly's here, so welcome to our show, Kimberly. We're so excited to meet you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
You're beautiful.
Thank
I'm telling you.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, I looked
and
at
part
her.
Of it is her voice.
Yeah. She's got that really nice radio voice, right, Allie?
Yes.
So we are here in Brevard County, Florida. We're all looking at what happened with the devastation with the Hurricane Ian. And in the meantime, people still have to prepare to vote. They still have to make a plan to vote. I'm sorry for all the people that lost their houses and their possessions and the loss of life. But sadly, life goes on, and the elections are here on November 8th. So bring us up to speed. Tell us a little bit about yourself. You have worked in the court system for over 30 years, and you've had various roles, and you understand the law, so take it from there.
Yes, thank you so much. I am Kimberly Musselman. I actually came to Brevard County a little over 30 years to attend Florida Institute of Technology. I was an undergrad in the psychology program there and graduated in 1992. And I got an internship at the jail in my senior year at Florida Institute of Technology, and it was in the pretrial release program. And that's where I started my interest in the criminal justice system. It was, you know, really interesting. I got to interview people that came into the jail, and then I wrote a report and provided it to the judge. And I have to say that was well before we really had computers. And so, you know, we provided that information.
When people could still write with a pen.
Exactly. And then from there, when I graduated, I was hired as a probation officer. And it really was one of the best jobs I ever had. I served in that role for 7 years. I, you know, really loved working in the court, and that gave me a lot of... I actually worked with Judge Majeed. I was his probation officer for about 3 years. We assigned. I know.
Yeah.
He is a wonderful.
If there's not anybody who says they don't love that guy,
yeah.
I have no idea.
Yeah, and everybody who knows you, Kimberly, they keep telling us the three things: that you're fair and compassionate, and you have the experience for this job.
Yes, I. You know, I hear a lot of people always say, "Oh, you're so common sense minded and, you know, reasonable, trusted, reliable." I mean, I really have. Received a lot of compliments from my supporters, and you know, that feels good because I do feel ready to serve in this role behind the bench.
Right, and you've got endorsements. You've been endorsed by quite a few people. Tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends some of the endorsements that you already have.
Sure, the state attorney, Phil Archer, who is my boss, is endorsing me, along with Dana Blickley, who is our property appraiser, and Lisa Cullen, who's our tax collector, Rachel Sadoff, who's the clerk of court and comptroller, and then the former clerk of court and comptroller, Scott Ellis, is also endorsing me, and I've known him for many years. Also, Mike Perillo, who happens to be the chief deputy at the public defender's office. And that is an important endorsement for me because Mike and I worked across the aisle in court trying a lot of cases against one another when we were, you know, new attorneys. And it's great to have the endorsement of somebody he believes I'm going to be, you know, fair.
That speaks volumes when
it
your
does.
Boss endorses yep. you, too. It means you were doing a pretty good job.
So explain to our listeners, too, because we always get this question. What exactly does a county court judge do?
So
like what types of...
Sure. County court handles the traffic offenses, you know, like speeding and some of those things. And then also the misdemeanor crimes, which are punishable up to 1 year in jail or 12 months of probation. And then they also handle civil disputes up to $30,000. So, you know, the small claims. It's the people's court. You know, it's the court, you know, that people come in with kind of smaller disputes. And what really makes me want to be there is, you know, I was a probation officer for 7 years in county court.
You're a people person.
I am a people
That's
person.
That's what it is.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you
absolutely.
Can tell. I think you're like me. You can make the wall talk.
Absolutely. <Yeah. laughs> I also, I worked in that division, obviously, in misdemeanor crimes for a while. But then I, within 2 years of being at the state attorney's office, they promoted me to the training attorney. So I spent a good 5.5 years training attorneys in the county court. And I really feel like, you know, the judges there, they are mentors to the public defender and state attorney there and the newer lawyers. And I feel like I've kind of
You've been part of the yeah. Brevard County community for a very long time. You also volunteer and you have a family. So if you feel free to tell us a little bit about where you volunteer and your family.
Sure. I have a lot of volunteer activities. The very first thing I got involved in here in Brevard was I became a literacy tutor for adults. Because when I was a probation officer, I encountered people that, you know, couldn't read the paper I was giving them or sign the paper. They, you know. So that was the first thing. And then I was a county court mediator for a little while. And then I began volunteering in just a variety of different things. I will support, you know, a lot of the different charities. But then I worked a lot with the Junior League, actually. And that's what, it was a great organization to join because it's a training of volunteers to, you know, work with all the different charities. And actually, we got very involved when I was there with the Children's Hunger Project.
Yes.
Which is a, you know, a great organization in our area. I actually served as the president of the Junior League in 2012. But right about that time, I actually was a foster parent also. And
when do you find a time?
Well, you know what was wonderful about, I did foster two siblings that I fortunately was able to adopt. Aww. In 2011. And I brought them along to all of these, you know, volunteer opportunities. It was great. They were 5 and 7, and they were very excited about the different opportunities that we had. And
they're your biggest cheerleaders now,
yes,
too.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And we continue to do a lot of volunteer activities. Both of my children.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, I wanted to make sure that we add the legal part of all of this, right? This particular part of the segment is paid for by the campaign to elect Kimberly Musselman to the county court judge.
Yeah, we've got to do all
seat
the right
four?
Things.
What's the four
Group
part?
Four.
Group four.
Group four.
Right, right.
So what is your vision for Brevard County? I mean, I'm sure you've seen something that you say, if I get elected and I'm the county court judge and for group four here in Brevard, I can do this. What is this you think you can do?
Well, as a prosecutor, because I haven't mentioned that, for 18 years I've been a prosecutor, and I will tell you that a lot of the crimes that happen in 30 seconds, you know, a minute. They happen very quickly. But then, unfortunately, the court system is very slow.
Yeah.
And sometimes cases are taking a year or 2 years or
And people's lives are on hold.
Right.
Yes.
You know, it's it affects really everyone. You know, the person that's been accused of the crime, you know, the lawyers, the law enforcement, the victims. So I really hope, as a county court judge, that I can assist the parties in, you know, getting to a resolution, either, you know, deciding whether it's going to be a trial or
moving forward.
Yeah,
oh,
definitely.
Whatever. Yes. Yes.
I actually worked as a judicial law clerk for 3 years, and I watched the judge that I worked with bring the parties together. Because that's the thing. It's the communication, and they're probably a lot closer to a resolution than they think. But people are busy. Lawyers are busy, and, you know, they don't always get to communicate. And so I think if we can hold some pretrial conferences or whatever, you know, the idea is, I think we can move cases along.
I see Allie wants to jump in here. You.
Oh, I don't have a whole lot to say about this except I've watched you sit here through the first 30 minutes. You're paying attention. You can see the wheels turning, and you're listening. And I think that in my book, court people need to listen. And it's easy to see that that's, that you're at a patient point to do all of that, and that should
count for something.
Yes,
right.
Yes,
it's, you have to be a great listener, right?
Oh boy, yeah. Particularly in the courts.
So regarding your prospective position, if you become the county court judge in Group 4, what would you consider some of your strengths and your weaknesses?
Well, my strength, and I didn't mention this earlier, but I've always been a searcher for the truth. A lot of times people think, oh, we're prosecutors, so we just rubber stamp what the police officers send us. But that's not true. I work very hard, like you've said, Allie, that I listen to everyone, and I want to hear, and I want everyone to feel heard and have, you know, an opportunity.
Kind of reminds me of Nancy Drew. She'll find a clue.
Well, you know, much to what you said, a lot of the crimes happen in a minute or a few minutes, and you've got to get, there's so much information packed into that minute.
Yes, she'll read it. She'll listen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I do think that I have a lot of experience with people.
Like, so you won't just take a rubber stamp paper and say, that's it, right?
No, and I feel like I want to say this, that I think a very small amount of people in the world are really, truly and they have to be, you know, prosecuted and, you know, incarcerated. The rest of the people in the criminal justice system are people with problems. They're mental health problems, they're substance abuse problems, homelessness and unemployment.
Socioeconomic problems.
Exactly. Even just a breakup of a relationship.
Yeah.
People that are obsessed with each other or texting one another hateful things, and that can be criminal. So if we can help them, all the parties in the courtroom, not only me, but all the parties, if we can help them, you know, remove that problem, then they'll stay out of the criminal justice system.
Right. And so you would say that you consider the biggest challenge in this position would probably be communication.
Absolutely.
And putting resources into a community, because that would help mental health and socioeconomic problems and environmental problems. And everything is all, it's all tied up, right?
Absolutely.
So oftentimes we have people that come on our show who are running for office, and our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, they always wonder, why did you decide to run for this particular position? Because you were doing pretty good. You're volunteering, you have the kids, you're a good lawyer, people like you, but you decided that I'm going to do this.
Well, actually, I'm in a really good position at the state attorney's office, that tomorrow I will be assisting with a grand jury. And that, you know, is there's that first degree homicides or what we do in the grand jury. So but I feel like I said, the time that I've spent over this past 30 years, I'm really well suited for county court. And I have to say, there's six of the judges on the bench right now that I was their training attorney when they were at the state attorney's office. So when I started to decide whether or not I wanted to do this, I thought I'm ready. I'm ready to serve behind the bench.
So judges are meant to be fair, they're meant to be impartial. What distinguishes you from another candidate who is running?
Well, I think experience is very important. And I do have, you know, 30 years of experience in different roles in the courtroom, which is, you know, and I have a lot of life experience. Just navigating the foster care system and adoption and, you know, and just the things that my children have went through have definitely taught me a lot more patience.
And paperwork. Probably saw what it takes to adopt a child in not just in Brevard, but in the United States. People think it's as easy as I want to adopt a kid. It's not.
And then just working with the guardian ad litem, and you know, I also, you know, I mean, I've really been in many roles. I actually myself have been a victim recently in June. Unfortunately, a person that was suicidal crashed into the front of my house.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. And
you don't hear about that kind of stuff every day.
And it's during the campaign. And so, and you know,
you have good coping mechanisms.
Yes.
That's what it is.
Where did
you get that from? Your parents?
Absolutely.
You're an only child, so they spend a lot of time with you.
I have a strong foundation from them, for sure. They taught me, you know, to believe in myself. They believed in me. And, you know, my mom taught me I'm responsible for my own happiness.
I sense a lot of yoga and meditation and things like that, because you're so calm. But really and truly, you said the magic word, it's foundation. The foundation for everything starts in the home. And a lot of people don't have that. So why do you think, like, right now we're having a very difficult time getting people who talk a lot, but there's no action. They're not registering to vote. Because a lot of people will say, well, I don't know anything about the judicial elections. Why not? There's a lot of information available. So why are people, like, they want to vote for the mayor, they want to vote for the president, they want to vote for state. But then when it comes to the judges, oh, I don't know. What can you tell that person who wants to know more about the judicial elections?
Well, I think it's different now that we have social media and the World Wide Web. I mean, you can definitely learn more about the judicial candidates than you could in the past. And you know what? The term is 6 years. 6 years that, you know, that judge is on the bench. So I think it's very important, you know, to know who you are voting for, and that you are not just voting because someone told you to, or you saw a sign, or, you know, you want to know a little bit more about the candidate, and you have that at your fingertips. Everyone has a smartphone, you know, and they can Google myself, they can Google my opponent, and, you know, they can find out some information. We both put our email addresses. I certainly have had people that have emailed me questions. And some I can answer, some I cannot, because of the Canon 7 rules for judicial
conduct. But right now, with so much that's going on in our community, in our state, and so forth, but even just in our community, a lot of people that have never, we'd never even consider being in trouble before. And even some of the scams that are going on are putting people in positions that they wouldn't normally be in. And first-timers are coming in front of judges scared to death about what the outcomes are going to be. So it's so important. Talk a little bit about that, about the you know, who, not that you have to say who's been coming, but, I mean, do you see an influx of crime, you know, I don't know if you call it white collar, blue collar, or whatever crime it is, but just crime that people aren't necessarily always engaged in. Like, this isn't a history.
Or being in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah. Like, somebody driving into your house some reason.
That's right. Well, one of the things that we have definitely seen in influx is the money laundering. Because, you know, those messages that you receive, hey, make $8,000 that week sitting at your house. Well, people do, you know, fall into that, and they do. And I've had a lot of conversations, very difficult conversations, with people that have been victimized, but, you know, also were kind of taking an opportunity. They thought it was an easy opportunity, but realized a lot of those romance scams.
Oh, yeah.
We have a lot of those things now.
And that all appears in court now, too, right?
Yeah. It can.
Sure.
The problem with some of those, I should mention, is that those the suspects that are doing those things can be out of the country.
They have burner phones and things.
Right.
I watch Lifetime, so I see a lot of that.
Right.
And the other thing is, you know, my mom had a way of saying, show me your friends and I'll tell you who you are.
Indeed.
You know,
yes,
I see, Allie, you agree with my mom.
I think our moms all talk.
Yeah, because that's the truth, because you could come from a great family, the best upbringing, you could come from a poor family. It doesn't matter your neighborhood or your zip code. Your friends, because I know people from, you know, immigrants who came to America and next to nothing to become doctors and lawyers because of their friends. But then I know people who had everything, and they're in trouble, right? So I mean, you will come across from the bench as a friendly judge. There are a lot of things we can do to help families and help communities. What do you think would be, like, the biggest challenges for you being a judge?
Well, that's where I've had such great mentors, like Judge Majeed and Judge Babb and Judge Silverman. They have, just like I said, my parents instilled in me that they believed in me. I would watch the judges believe in the person in front of them. I believe you can go get your license. I believe you can get a job. I believe you can get sober. I want to inspire people that way, too. I want, you know, I might not be the only inspiration, but I want them to understand that this obstacle is not so insurmountable that they can't change their life and they can't, you know, make a difference. And, you know, I really hope we can work a lot on the substance abuse and mental health, because it's kind of hand in hand, unfortunately. But fentanyl is a huge issue. I can tell you that when COVID was happening, I used to file probably 5 trafficking cases a year. Now I file 5 a month because the law enforcement were making the stops. So people were moving drugs in our community a lot more. It's slowing down. Fortunately, we're starting to see that change. But that I just went to a fentanyl summit too, which I was one of the.
Who would have thought there would be a fentanyl summit in America? Right? I mean, it's
we're
rampant.
Here.
Yeah. So we've got two more minutes, and let's say you meet somebody and you tell them, "My name is Kimberly Musselman, and I'm running for circuit court judge in Group 4." What is your elevator speech for them? Because every candidate that comes on our show have speech that's prepared to sway a voter why they should register to vote on November 8th, either vote by mail, either you vote in person, either you vote early vote. I don't know how else they can vote, but they better vote. So what would you tell them?
Right, there's so many ways to vote, so please do. There's early voting. And so I'm Kimberly Musselman, and I have been here. I love this county very much, and I want to continue to serve in this county, but just in a different role, behind the bench, working very hard to, you know, seek justice for victims, you know, help the accused and the people that are, you know, dealing with a lot of problems in their lives, you know, turn their lives around and become productive, happy citizens. I'm caring. I am trusted. I'm reliable. I think I will have, you know, a calm demeanor as a judge for sure. And I want to listen. I want every person that comes in that courtroom to believe that, you know, or know, I should say, that I am going to listen to them, treat them with dignity and respect.
And be fair.
And your resume is amazing, just of the things that you've done. And you've hit, you know, in through the judicial system, you've hit people at different spots.
Every kid should should have her parents.
Exactly.
Look at her resume.
Right.
You're right. Yeah. I was reading it. So, and the other thing, events, we have about 20 seconds left. Where can people meet you if they want to? I know there's something going on tonight.
Tonight, yes, there is.
At Bukaska?
Yes, and then the Brevard County Bar is sponsoring a forum next Wednesday, and it's at 5:30, and it's at the Brevard County Court, Commissioner's Room. There are quite a few events coming up.
So they can go on your website and give us the website.
Absolutely. www.KimberlyMusselman, and that's MusselmanN.com.
So if you want to sign, if you want to donate, if you want to volunteer, there's still a few weeks left.
Absolutely.
To get all that great stuff done. And once again, Sita, thank you so much for a fantastic show here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And Kimberly Musselman, thank you so much. Good luck in the candidacy. We're pulling for you. Allie, thanks so much for coming out with us.
You bet.
And we'll see you next week right here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
That's all we can do, Al. Take one day at a time.
One day at a time.
Thank you.
That's it.